Good afternoon. Good to see everybody. Just before we get started, I know last year when we got together, it was under, more difficult circumstances. Everything that going on with the marathon, I know it's kind of belated, but just kind of looking back a week ago, I know there's actually a lot of people in here, a few people, Andy, Cicely, Christy, that actually participated in the marathon, which was really neat and fascinating just to see the city and the way that the region responded. You know, it was kind of uplifting. I know it was, like I said, a week ago, but I just thought it'd be appropriate just to make a commentary about that and, just from my perspective, just how neat it was, to live in this region, to be in a city, and to see the support, the number of people that ran. I mean, 30-some-odd thousand, a million people watching a race. I failed to mention Bears as well, I guess. I guess I should give Bears some recognition. So, really cool, really neat. Obviously, we're in a, better situation than we were a year ago, but I just thought it'd be appropriate to acknowledge that. In addition to that, quick congratulations to the Hall of Fame finalists. Coach Parcells, obviously he's left his mark on this organization and the league, a number of different franchises. Raymond Claiborne, was a heck of a player for the organization. And then Ty, who probably have a little bit more experience, at least from my perspective. Ty was a heck of a player. Probably still thinks he can go out there and cover people, just knowing his mentality and his competitiveness and his competitive nature. So, congratulations to them, and it'll be interesting to see how that all unfolds. And as it relates to the draft, we were obviously getting close, about a week or so away. We can change away. Just want to recognize John Robinson and his staff, just the amount of time and the effort that they've put in. I mean, it's an exhaustive process that really goes back to, this time a year ago in preparation for this draft. I mean, there's a lot of people that are involved, and John and his staff do an outstanding job on a number of different levels. Certainly grateful for his efforts. I mean, there's a lot of people organizationally that are involved, but John certainly has a big hand in what we do. This draft in particular, it's a good draft. Obviously, there's a proliferation of underclassmen. I want to say the number is close to 100, so they factor in like they do every year. Certainly added a degree of depth to the draft. We're excited about the opportunity next week. And we'll see how it all unfolds. I don't think there's really a set formula going into it, how we're going to approach it. We hopefully have put the work in and prepared and have the evaluations correct, and then ultimately have to make the decision that we feel is best for our team in an effort to try to improve our team. This won't stop the team building process. There'll be other opportunities for us to do it, but with the roster at 65 right now, so there's probably 25 spots, give or take, that are available, which a large bulk of those will probably come next week, and I would say in a few weeks moving forward as well. So that's where we are for now and for today, and I'll take some questions and we'll open it up.
So what do you think is the defining characteristic of this draft?
I'd say the underclassmen are a huge part of it. Obviously the largest number that we've had. There's certain positions, like there are every year, of strength. The receiver position is a deep group. There's a deep group of running backs. I'd say there's a deep group of defensive linemen that are different types of players. I think there's a lot of good football players that may not get drafted, which is the case every year, because just from a sheer numbers standpoint. So, you factor in all those different situations, and you're going to evaluate the players the same way. It doesn't really affect the evaluation process. You maybe have to go back a little bit more on some of the underclassmen, who have declared, because there's a less of a body of work that's available. But ultimately, the process is the same. You go through it, and really the first opportunity you have with those players comes a lot later, because you really don't get to them until February, which is the first time that they're actually available. So you sort of have to fast forward everything, and you really have February, March, April to sort of get the information, make sure it's correct, and then ultimately make the evaluation of the player. So I think you've probably spent time evaluating them, but as far as the depth and spending the one-on-one time with them, that's probably the thing that's probably different relative to the other players who you've had a little bit more opportunity and a little more exposure to.
In your view, what's a good way to measure the success of a draft class from your front office perspective?
Really, there's no, I would say, exact science as it relates to this. You just try to find guys that fit your team, and in the end, just try to evaluate them for the role that they're going to have for your team. Inevitably, some work out, some don't work out, and you just have to go back and figure out where there may have been, you know, why didn't it work? You know, was it the player? Do we overvalue a certain aspect of his athleticism, of his actual ability, his skill level? So there's a number of different metrics that you look at, and really it's specific to the player, and everybody, I would say, starts at a different point, and their progression, each player is going to be different. So it's a case-by-case basis. Ultimately, you're trying to find players that fit your team. Not all players fit your team. Some fit better than others. So you hopefully you do the best you can to try to identify those players and fit them into your system. You know, I'd say it's really system-specific to our team, realizing that there's a number of these players that are going to be playing in the NFL, and we understand that and we respect that. But, you know, in the end, we just have to figure out the players that fit a specific profile and have a defined role and try to project them in. And in the end, it's still a projection element. You know, there's a little bit of, you know, hit and miss there. So
how do you weigh the value, especially in the early rounds, of a player who could step in right away and be an immediate starter because you have a hole in the depth chart versus a player who might not have an immediate role as a rookie but maybe projects as a better player over the long term? How do you go about making that choice?
Sure, you factor everything in. If just look at our team, just where we are today, you know, if we had to go out there and play a game, we feel that we could field a competitive team. So you try to go through, and in the end, you try to find the players that you feel fit best for your team, regardless of their position. And, you know, if we had to go out there and play today, you know, we have a number of players. Now, we're only 4 or 5 days into the offseason program, so you're really not sure what to expect. You have some inclination, but different players are going to progress at different paces and different speed. So you can say, well, this player is going to come in and do X. Well, ultimately, the player's performance is going to determine what his role is. You may have an idea of this is how we envision the player, but if he can't come in and actually do that, then in the end, the competition, we sort of let that unfold itself. So the player's performance ultimately is going to dictate how big of a role that is, and whether that's early or whether that's late. Ultimately, that's going to be based on his performance relative to the other players at his position.
Do you want to have a blend then to your draft class? Say, okay, this guy's kind of plug and play, or he'll be able to do more than special teams in his first year, but you can't have a bunch of guys who would be, and then if you take another guy who would be a project, maybe he's coming off an injury and he's undervalued because of that, and you could start the season on top. You can't load yourself up with that. You have to have a complement and a blend in the class. Do you look at that?
I think you just have to have a balance of players and realizing that, you know, different players are going to have different roles. I mean, there's no exact definitive formula. Say we need X, we need Y, we need Z. I think we look at it and say, okay, once we go through the board and do the evaluation and stack it positionally, say, okay, who's the best player for our team given what else is out there up on the board right now? And if a player comes along sooner rather than later, then great. If it takes them a little bit further, like, we understand that too. So ultimately, we're trying to find the best 53 that fit our team, so that ultimately in September when we go out there and are ready to play, like, we have that group of players. Realizing that there might be another group of players who aren't on the roster, but at some point, like the Josh Kleins, you know, who start the season, they come in, they're not drafted, they work hard, they start the year on the practice squad, and ultimately they put themselves in a position where they take advantage of their opportunity. So there's cases like that. So I wouldn't say there's one set formula, Tom. I think you just have to figure out, you know, what's best for your situation, just as we sit here today, realizing that that could change at any given point in time.
Nick, is there a cutoff point for players, say, that have character issues? Is there a line that you won't cross? And if there has that moved any, given some of the things that have happened in recent years?
I think the players, really, you look at the entire body of work, you know, when you create the profile on a player, which there are a multitude of metrics that go into that. Their player's performance, their football character, which is separate from their off-the-field character, if you will. So there's a number of things that go into the profile of the player, their medical history, their performance, their play history. So you're really trying to take all that information and in the end say, okay, here's the profile of that player, and then if we feel comfortable organizationally with that player, then we make the decision. If we don't feel comfortable, then we move on to the next player. So each player is going to have their own package, and we understand that, we realize that, and ultimately we have to make the decision that we feel is best. So we spend a lot of time on that, and, you know, we try to make the best decision that we can for us at the time.
Nick,
How much more important has the interview process been, and what are you trying to gauge when you bring a player in or you meet with a player wherever? What are you trying to gauge?
A lot of things. The interview process in and of itself, you touch on a number of different things. It's their personal situation, their background. The football component of it, I'd say, is significant. You know, as an example, let's say you have a player that you talk to at an All-Star game. So you have one exposure there with someone from your personnel department. And then you're at the combine and you have another dialogue with them, maybe as, you know, whether it's a position coach or Bill or myself. And then you go out in the spring and then you work them out. And let's say you try to teach them your system, install some of your system, go through their role, okay, here's this play, here's your assignment, and then you have that same player, and you bring him to your facility, and then you're looking at his recall. Okay, well, how did he handle the information that we gave him? Is the same story that he gave one coach, is it different from? So you have really a system of checks and balances. Like, well, there's one, it's not one 15-minute combine interview that you say, okay, well, we've got it all straight. You know, that's just really an introduction in some cases. Maybe you've had some exposure at different points along the way. So it's very extensive, it's very exhaustive, and it touches on a number of different areas. And really what we're trying to do is figure out, within the confines of this building, will he be able to handle the demands of our program on a day-to-day basis? And really that's what you're trying to get to. So you try to dig in as best you can, as much as you can, on a variety of different topics and areas. And the football component is a huge part of that process, just in terms of their learning capacity, in terms of the ability to actually play within your system. So there's definitely a lot that goes into it.
Have you had any more interaction this year than past with some of the top quarterbacks in the draft?
I think this year is really no different. I think what we try to do is take each position and really try to know top to bottom as thoroughly as we can, as many players at that position. I mean, historically, we spend a lot of time this time of the year, whether it's players that we bring to the stadium, that we work out on campus. So the process, I would say, is really no different this year than it is in years past. It's all with the idea of trying to gain as much information about that position group top to bottom, so then when you're sitting up there looking at X amount of players, you have a good baseline of information, and it's not, well, we haven't spent enough time. You know, the answer isn't, I don't know, we haven't spent enough time with them. So, look, we can't get everybody, but you try to identify and earmark X number of players, and then we try to get as much information as we can so that we're prepared in the event that we have to make a decision at some point along the way.
One theory, just on meeting with a quarterback, like is some might say, oh, when you do that, you can get information that perhaps could help you, you know, the next year if you ever have to face that quarterback. Is that overstated in your opinion, or could there be some value to that?
Well, I mean, when you talk to a player, I would just say, generally speaking, when you talk to a player that's played at whatever school, you know, you try to go through and say, okay, what have you done offensively or defensively? Okay, your role, your position, what's your assignment? Because a lot of the time when you're watching the film, you really don't know what they're asked to do. So you're trying to actually have the player teach you, like, what's going on here? Okay, to see if he can learn anything. So, but once a player gets into the NFL, like whatever he's done in college or whatever he's learned or whatever system that he's played in, it's really irrelevant. So now they're moving forward, they're going to be with another team, so it's going to be specific to that team. So if a player is playing, like let's say he went to Illinois just to pick a school, okay, so all right, you get some information about what they did at Illinois, and then he's in the league playing for Buffalo. Well, does it really matter, like, what he did defensively at Illinois? Now he's, you know, I don't know. So, I mean, in the end, you want to just, when you meet with a player, you're just trying to look at his mental acumen and his capacity to learn. How does he process information? How does he recall? Does he need repetitions? Is he more of a visual learner? So I think you're looking at more of their method of learning as opposed to what they actually are learning, if that makes any sense.
Why is the wide receiver position traditionally so tough to project from college to NFL? And is tight end kind of get lumped in that too because they're also receivers?
To a certain extent. So the receiver position in general, there's so many more multiples that are involved, which a lot of these players don't see. One of the things that's come into play is the use of the high-frequency, high-tempo offense. So you run a play, you sprint to the line and they get a playoff within 5 to 10 seconds. So the player stays in one spot. Chances are they're repeating the same play. So, and the complexity of coverages defensively, I would say, is minimal because you can't have a lot of calls defensively to combat the pace and the speed, you know, what a team's doing offensively. So there are definitely more multiples coverage-wise that they're going to see on a week-to-week basis. So with a lot of the time of being the proximity of the defender between himself and the receiver, I would say the number of teams that actually play at the line of scrimmage defensively on a consistent play-by-play basis is very small. So the majority of the time, the defender is 5, 6, 7 yards off, so he has free access into the defense, so there's less that he has to deal with at the line of scrimmage. So now you fast forward when I would say the majority of the time you're going to have a defender in your face at the line of scrimmage on the perimeter or in the slot as well. Now inside, there's some different components that go into play. So there's just more multiples, there's more variety of coverages, there's more disguise. So the ability to think quickly and react to what you see, some can do that better than others, apart from the sheer fact that they really haven't been asked to do it. So, and the tight end position, it's different, but some of these tight ends, they're detached from the line of scrimmage 95-100% of the snaps. Well, the likelihood of that player actually doing that on a 70-snap game basis is minimal. He's going to be on the line of scrimmage. Maybe he's detached or flexed out slightly. Maybe he's off the line of scrimmage in the backfield or in a wing position. So I think there's just more of a multitude and more multiples that those players are forced to deal with at those positions as it relates really to coverage, adjustments, et cetera. So it takes a little bit of time to understand that and learn that, you know, just the simplicity of some of the colleges. That's just the way that that's what they're dealing with on a weekly basis. So we can't change that. But what you hopefully be able to do is project and say, based on his physical attributes, he may be able to do it, or he may have a hard time doing it, or mentally he's a little bit of a slower processor, so coverage direct. So those are some of the things that come into play, I would say, at those two positions.
After drafting,
Karen, go ahead.
Organizationally, do you have to think about a succession plan for Tom now, or is that still a year or two away down the road?
Yeah, I think right now our focus is just on the draft and trying to improve our team. You know, we go through, you know, we'll go through the offseason program, you know, once we have the players that are here. But look, we're focused on the short term. You know, like I said, we just started the offseason program. We'll see how our players, where they are, you know, physically once we get on the field, once we start practicing. So, I mean, right now I think our focus is on the draft and just trying to improve our football team.
In terms of drafting a quarterback to succeed Tom, would that be something you'd focus on now or more toward down the road?
I'd say we're focused on improving our football team in whatever capacity we can do it, and we'll always consider that.
This would go for really any position probably, but after drafting two receivers last year, would it make you at all hesitant to go for that position again, you know, putting so much into one spot?
It's a good question. I think what you don't want to do is pass on a good football player, that regardless of your circumstances. You know, we talked about this a little bit years past, you know, when we drafted Nate, you know, with Matt, we felt that he was going to be coming back, and then we had Sebastian. So, you know, when we drafted Nate, at the time, did we necessarily need to draft that player? Maybe, maybe not, but we felt that that was a player that we had conviction about. We felt good about the player, and then we'd figure out a way, you know, to utilize him. So, you know, you never want to pass up a player. You know, look, if they're equal value, maybe you go to a different position, but if there's a good football player and he's head and shoulders above the rest, then, you know, internally we just have to make that decision. But you don't want to pass on a player just because he has a position where there might be numbers or volume or whatever the case may be.
Understanding that you know the process doesn't change when you prepare for a draft, and you know you're going to draft whenever they tell you to draft, May 8th, 9th, 10th. These extra 2 weeks, helpful, excessive? What is your opinion on the extra time?
I think it's really how you utilize it. You know, I would say we're not really doing anything differently. Has it given us a few more weeks? Maybe, but I would say just generally speaking, it really hasn't had much of an impact. Maybe it gave Bill a chance to run the half marathon over the weekend, so, which maybe he didn't mind. So whenever the draft is, you know, whenever they tell us it is, then we'll be ready to go for it.
Nick, we haven't spoken at all offseason. How do you envision Darrell Revis and Brandon LaFell and Brandon Browner, I guess, helping out this team?
Sure. Any new player that we bring in, you know, they start kind of at this at the same level. So we'll indoctrinate them into our program. Like I said, we're this is the sixth day of the offseason program. There's a lot of players that have been here. So once we get on the field and start working as a group, we'll have a better idea. But, you know, we think those players can help us, and, you know, we'll see how they do once we get rolling with the rest of the group.
Nick, with a player like Julian Edelman, someone who was drafted here, kind of cultivated, were able to bring back, is that an example of what you like to see or of things going well during the draft process?
Well, I think Julian really has earned everything that he's received over the course of his career. You know, there's a guy who never caught a punt, never caught a pass until he arrived here. So, you know, it's a really a credit to Julian. It's a credit to the coaches for continuing to work with him. And, you know, he deserves a lot of the credit. But what you try to find players that have certain qualities and criteria, and then, you know, when you bring them into your program, hopefully they continue to improve and they take the coaching on a year-to-year basis. And, you know, when they have an opportunity to perform, and they go out there and perform. I mean, I think that's what you hope to do with players when you bring them in. It doesn't always work that way, but hopefully that's the idea. You just try to bring players in, teach them your system, get them to improve, and then however far that goes will be a product of their efforts and what they do. But, I mean, Julian, you know, has put a lot of time in, and he deserves whatever he's received.
How much of this process right now is a poker game between you and the other executives around the league?
I'd say it's a pretty big one. I mean, there's so much information that's floated out there, and the reality is nobody really knows, I mean, other than their respective teams. So there's a lot of information that's out there. I think you just have to be careful of how much stock you actually put into it. You know, you try to make your best guess of what you anticipate a team may or may not do, but I'd say there's probably a lot of noise that's out there, and nobody really knows until the actual draft starts and the team picks. So, I mean, I think that's the truth.
As far as the safety position goes for the Patriots, Nick, how much do you guys value having two guys that have sort of distinct responsibilities, maybe that traditional free versus strong safety position? Is that important, or too much out of that you need to have those two separate?
Yeah, I mean, I think having versatile players that can do multiple things is important. And how you deploy those players, I mean, ultimately, you know, you try to play to a player's strengths. So whatever a player does well, you try to put them in a position schematically where they can utilize those skills. You know, but we've had corners that have played safety, safeties that have played safety. So, you know, that position, there's a lot of things that go into it. There's a space game. There's a tackling game. Their instinctiveness, ball skills, all those types of things, they're applicable to not only the safety position but the corner position as well. I mean, some corners actually look like safeties. Some safeties look like corners. So I think the defensive back group in general, you know, having the degree of position versatility is certainly helpful, especially when you're playing certain teams on a week-to-week basis. It doesn't force you to make wholesale changes. Well, if this guy's in the game, then we got to put this guy in the game. So, you know, having guys that are multiple that might be able to utilize in multiple roles, there's certainly value in that. All right. All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.